fishing. I'm going fishing, hook, sinker, and line. I said fish.
It doesn't sound any like anything's any better than that, especially with the way the weather is right now. This is like the perfect week in Florida. I don't think it gets much better than this. I mean, we've got, you know, mild temperatures, the water's in the, you know, around 80, high 70s. We've got beautiful skies. It's cool. It's nice. Even in the middle of the day right now, you can stand outside and not feel like you're getting hit by a hairdryer and a suntan lamp. You know, it's actually pretty awesome.
Walked outside at 5 o'clock this morning and said, what's wrong?
Yeah, what's wrong? I'm not sweating.
Something's not right.
Yeah, this is awesome. Fish and Frank here in the chair. Robert the Blind Tarpon in the chair across from me. Captain Kale in the middle seat. And we have RJ in the control booth. Anybody got... to me, I think a couple of the big stories going on right now. Red tide's kind of fading. There's very little around, but we're sporadic patches coming back and forth here and there. Heard a little bit north of us. I don't really think it's going to be a big issue for the next month or so, but I think a little bit in the year we're going to have to watch for it. The Peace River's down to about 2 feet, about 430 cubic feet per second, which is 400 short of what we need to protect Charlotte Harbor from red tide. So hopefully nothing happens here in the next month.
Yeah, the red tide report will probably be coming out today from FWC.
It was on my computer, and I forgot to look at it.
Was it?
Yeah, I saw it there, and I just went, I don't want to know.
There's still a heavy patch up in St. Pete, and then there's been a couple miscellaneous, not accurate or inaccurate, basically, reports of Venice.
Yeah, Venice has had a couple little pop-up blooms. But the thing is, you can be standing there and everything's perfect, and then all of a sudden the red tide will pop up. Or you could go there and be coughing, and then 5 minutes later it's gone.
Yeah.
There's no way to tell when you get these little pop-ups like that. But all in all, everything's doing great. It's a great time to come to Florida. Mm-hmm. And if you're coming down, one of the things you might want to do is wheel and deal with the hotels and the rental places and stuff, because they're still really empty. And it's a great time to call them up and say, oh, you want $800? Well, I'll tell you what, I'll give you five. Well, seven? Okay, six. You know, I think you can literally go and wheel and deal with some of these places. But now, I will say, we talked to a realtor, the other day, and a lot of them are starting filling up. By the end of November, those deals are going to be off because it's getting kind of nasty up north. So, but back in here to the fishing, redfish are just going crazy. Robert, what's up with the redfish?
Where aren't they? That's the main thing. I mean, guys are catching them on the all on the east wall down into Matlache. The west wall has got quite a few fish, and then bull and turtle got very good numbers of them, and it's just a lot of fish along the bushes.
The west side of the harbor and in front of Bull and Turtle Bay seem to have, you know, a little bit bigger size fish. And the only other place that's got bigger fish like that is kind of from Pirate Harbor down to Two Pines. You're seeing some big reds over there, and then you jump across the harbor. As you get north on the east side, there's still a lot of redfish, but they're getting smaller up there. They're not as big as what you find further south or across on the west side from what I'm hearing.
Yeah, I think that's pretty accurate. There's just such a hodgepodge of fish everywhere, and I'm not hearing of a lot of schools of fish. But two to four fish per bush or per mouth of a creek, I mean, they're just kind of good numbers. The only place where I heard about like a small school of fish that showed up for a couple days, but I haven't heard of anything since then, was out there at the old phosphate dock out at Boca Grande last week. Right at the end of last week, two different people were out there looking for sheep's head.
Yeah.
And got into some big bull reds all around the phosphate dock and the old Boca Bay docks.
There's been a decent school south of Matt Lachey and heard of one up in the Indian Fields, but there was basically just a couple of guys I was talking to. No massive reports of them, but good enough. Kale, what are you seeing out and around Ann Arbor?
Like you said, the redfish are doing pretty well. I call the Bull and Turtle Bay redfish Tuesday fish.
Tuesday fish?
Tuesday fish. You go fish them on Tuesdays.
Okay.
They get the ever-loving snot beat out of them all weekend long by 50 boats. Then you get them in day to cool off and get used to not having that pressure. And then you go fish them on Tuesday. And you'll find that they're more than willing to eat if you do that.
Yeah. If you can get out there in the middle of the week right now, you're kind of by yourself. Charters are at some of the lowest point that I've ever seen for as far as people hiring somebody to take them out fishing. And so it's a phenomenal time to be out there during the week right now. You can literally, it's nirvana.
Yeah, you're alone.
Yeah, there's nobody there. You've got the fish to yourself, plenty of fish to have. Speaking of that, snook seem to be about everywhere. I mean, out at Placida, Stump Pass Marina, there is snook in the Port Charlotte canals. There's snook in the PGI canals, the 41 Bridge, I-75. I mean, we're just hearing snook, snook, snook. Everybody's just catching snook. Of course, it's out of season, so...
Right.
That's... I mean, I think it's like deer hunting.
Well, it is. What do you see during deer season?
Not much.
Squirrels. What do you see during small game season? Deer.
Yeah, there you go.
It's like they know.
But I can't even imagine it going to some place where there's not snook right now.
No, there's been good numbers of them. The weird part is that, like, in the canals, in particular behind the house, they've been acting really funky. Sunday night and Monday night, no fish at all. Like, one little peanut. Tuesday night, girlfriend had a 36, a 34, and a 30-plus incher in five casts.
Okay, so we've established that Tuesday is the best day to fish for snook and redfish.
Right. But then last night, kind of the same scenario. She hooked a couple small fish, but nothing real exceptional. And then I talked to another gentleman. He did outstanding Sunday night over in PGI. I mean, he whacked on them, so it seems like certain areas seem to be...
Certain days?
Yeah, you know, and I think the full moon and our
now,
first
are we throwing
actual...
a roulette wheel around and going, okay, you know, pick a day, any day.
Well, it's a full moon and your first actual real cold front of the season.
Yeah.
So that tends to mess with the fish a little bit because the barometer rising and falling that drastically. The wind shifted, you know, from east to south to west to north. Back to northeast again in a matter of 24 hours.
And it's going to be going to southwest here. We've got the remnants of the hurricane coming across. We're hoping to get some rain in the Peace River off of that. Even if it doesn't rain here, it's just got to rain up on the top end of the Peace River. If we can get that to happen, and that's what it's going to kind of look like for Friday, is this is going to be kind of iffy weather all throughout the state. The remnants of that hurricane that hit Mexico on the Pacific coast is coming across now. That's supposed to be here tomorrow. That's going to make a pretty good change in the fish. But people ask, well, why did the snook all move up into the canals? Why the snook moving, you know, going so much? And why is so much of the stuff changing? We had a 10-degree drop in water temperature. Why did the sheephead start moving in a little bit? 10-degree drop in water temperature. That is going to get their attention. I mean, I was watching a thing on, there was a bunch of sea turtles up north. They got caught in the very cold weather. They had a little chill front come through, and they didn't move south quick enough, and they got caught in the icy water, you know. And it's the same thing with these fish. They know as that temperature starts to fall, time to move to the winter grounds.
Yeah, absolutely. That's very true.
You know,
and fish are cold-blooded just like sea turtles are. So, you know, you've got to regulate yourself. And a lot of people don't realize cold is, I mean, number one thing is cold is relative to where you're at, not where you're from.
where you're at, not where you're from.
Yeah.
Big, important difference.
Huge difference.
Here, 70-degree water's perfect. 60 is very, very cold.
Right.
And you got to slow down. If you got 60-degree water, it's like fishing 35-degree water in Minnesota.
At least. You know, because a lot of our fish are either tropical or subtropical fish. They can't tolerate massive changes in the temperature, especially when it goes from hot to cold real quick.
Yeah. Well, you know. I got to tell you, speaking of massive changes, Jerry at SOS Marine is retiring. Now, Jerry's been one of my best friends for like 30 years, and I have no idea what I'm going to do without SOS Marine. They've sold the property. Jerry decided to retire. They sold the property. There's going to be a tow truck place there or something, but he's having a big yard sale. I was there this morning. I bought a bunch of switches. I got a couple of winches. He's got trailers there and axles and boat parts. And, you know, if you've got older boats and trailers and stuff, he's got boat trailers he wants to sell. He's got all kinds of stuff he's selling over there.
Wow.
It's at 2481 Saltstone Drive out in Harbor Heights. That's 2481 Saltstone Drive in Harbor Heights. It was SOS Marine. It's the last 30 years. I cannot even think how I would have got through chartering the boats at the oil spill, the markers, the signs, all the work I did for the feds.
Yeah.
How I would ever got through without Jerry. I have no idea what I'm going to do now without SOS Marine. It's literally, I was almost in tears this morning walking around there looking at stuff. If you've never met Jerry out at SOS, biker looking guy, literally salt of the earth type person. I mean, there's nobody nicer, nobody, you know, who cares more about what he does than Jerry out there.
Absolutely. And,
Jerry used to come on my old radio shows. He was always a part of my old TV shows back when I had my own TV program. And, you know, to think of not being able to stop in and, you know, because I stop in to have coffee with him every once in a while in the morning before I go to work. And, just, you know, shoot the stuff. And, you know, I've still got all my motors I got to go over there and get. I got motors on stands over there that Jerry got the last ones fixed. I ended up with a power head, a couple of midsection parts, but I got, he put my last 115 together for me. So I got one good boat for the kayak, or we got one good motor for the kayak boat. Jerry is the one who built the boat when I was getting ready to give you that skiff, Robert.
Right.
SOS did all the work on that. It's just, I have no idea what I'm going to do with them. But go down, if you need some boat parts, new or used boat parts, he's got a little bit of everything out there. He's going to be going on through Saturday, and it's at 2481 Saltstone Drive, and saying that with kind of a tear in my eye, just literally, my buddy's not going to be in business, and I'm, you know, God bless him, he's retiring and all that, but man, that hurts. All right, speaking of things starting, thinking of things ending, mullet run's getting going, isn't it, Robert?
Yeah, it's starting to out there. You know, it's traditionally normally that November full moon is when it's in full swing, but October sometimes kicks it off. And this year they started schooling up in September, and there's been a lot of mullet moving through all of the canals. Some of the mullet guys are already out there on the flats and in the center of the harbor chasing some of these fish. So it's good and bad. I mean, I personally don't agree with it, but the cool part about it is that it creates a major feed for a lot of our fish. You know, the snook will get really excited at the mouths of the canals, same way with the jacks, the juvenile tarpon. And then in the middle of the harbor, you'll get the big tarpon, cobia, small sharks. As those mullet run offshore, it brings in the king mackerel. The bigger sharks will sometimes follow those mullet back as they come heading back towards shore. You know, it can be a pretty exciting time. So, and if you're a bird watcher, it's really pretty amazing because you'll see a lot of bald eagles out there and ospreys whacking at them too, because there's a pretty significant amount of fish. I mean, there's some of these schools will be, you know, I don't have numbers, but some of the schools that I've seen before personally, a mile long, half a mile wide, and as deep as you can see. You know, and that's offshore. Never mind what you see near shore.
Yeah, it's literally amazing. This has been a weird year, though. We've had person after person saying, where's the mullet? We're not seeing the mullet jump. Now, we're also not seeing thread fins on the surface and white bait on the surface the way we did just a few years ago.
Just a few months ago. I mean, before the rain started, the harbor was full of thread fins and greenbacks.
But they've all been staying deep. They seem to be breaking their natural pattern. Like, they know if they show themselves, somebody's going to come on them. And I think they're starting to hide deeper.
Well, I think a lot of that and a lot of the fresh water that we've been having and the red tide near the beaches has pushed a lot of that bait offshore. We don't have anywhere near the amount of tarpon we should have in the harbor right now. I sat out in front of Pirate Harbor the other day in 6 feet of water and watched a half a mile long swath of ladyfish feeding on the surface like Spanish mackerel. And we watched them for hours.
And I can honestly tell you, we saw that when I was out with Carl catching tarpon, when I was out, you know, when we took my son out a few weeks ago. Literally just acres and acres of ladyfish going crazy and it's no tarpon hitting them. But we went a half a mile away and there were tarpon you could ever want. I mean,
it's like they knew
thousands of them.
It's like they knew they were safe.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's a lack of tarpon. I think it's just they're not there. That's why the ladyfish are feeling fun to, you know, let's go. Okay, we're going to eat. We're going to jump. We're going to do all this stuff. And they're just unmolested because the tarpon are half a mile or a mile away.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's a lack of tarpon. It's kind of like bait fish. You see, if you're ever fishing on the east side, west side, Bow Bay, Turtle Bay, and you have this massive school of bait come through, and watch, if nothing hits them, nothing eats them, go somewhere else. Because right. They just had the smorgasbord of smorgasbords go by. Oh, look at all this bait. We're going to fish. Well, if nothing's hitting the bait, if nothing's eating it, really, it means you're in a bad place at the bad time, you know, or the right place at the wrong time or wrong place and whatever. But, you know, time to move is what it means. What's your feeling on tarpon right now, Robert? What are you hearing?
I think it's about average to maybe a little below average, but the tarpon fishing's still pretty good out there. They're in the 20-foot holes. They're on the outside edges of the 20-foot holes a lot, you know, kind of in between the 20-foot hole and the Alligator Creek Reef or closer towards the west wall. And then there's been a lot of fish down in Boca Grande Pass. There's quite a few fish staging up down there, and those are local resident fish and migratory fish because you got
now,
fish that'll stay there
year-round. We had Boca Grande Pass in December was full of tarpon.
Right. Yeah, day like after 2 Christmas.
2 years ago,
yeah.
The day after Christmas, you could go there and catch 10 tarpon, you know, in 4 hours. I mean, as fast as you drop a line down, you could catch them. And that was in December. So having Boca Grande Pass full of tarpon in October is not uncommon.
No, and we always have a couple of year-round residents that stay in the pass. And then you have some of the resident fish that'll move
stay in the harbor, maybe.
No, there's some fish that'll stay in that pass year-round.
Really?
Yeah, because you'll hear that oddball guy in January out there that'll hook one while he's snapper fishing. Or you get some of the beach fishermen that are trying to catch some of those goliaths or sandbars that'll hook a tarpon out there throwing their dead bait on the bottom. There's always a couple stragglers there. It's not a targetable number by any stretch.
It's kind of like mahi offshore on this coast.
Yeah.
They're there. Yes, you can catch them, but can you go out and actually target them? Tough to do.
Exactly.
Really tough to do.
But some of those fish will be heading over to Central America, maybe even Africa, and then you've got some of those fish will just move right back into the harbor and dissolve and go into hibernation or into that weird parallel universe where they just disappear.
It's a completely different dimension.
RJ, you mullet run guy, you ever done much with the mullet runs?
My place in the mullet run is I am on the far end of the food chain. My neighbors and friends go out and catch mullet. They bring them in and they smoke them. And then they go get in trouble somewhere and need some legal help, and they show up at my house with lots of smoked mullet. So I'm excited that the mullet run has started again.
Now, it's out of all the people, all the ways I've heard about being involved in the mullet thing, because, you know, you go on the east coast of Florida, it's absolutely awesome over there. These guys literally build aluminum frames around their outboard engines because they're drifting, throwing cast nets. The boats are bashing into each other. And if your motor isn't encased in a metal frame, it'll literally get crushed.
Yep.
And it's bumper boats. And, I mean, dozens and dozens of boats. Everybody throwing nets, millions of mullet going everywhere. And it's the first time I've ever heard of, well, I got neighbors that get in a lot of trouble and need legal help, so they pay me a mullet.
Only in Florida can you turn mullet into a business venture.
That's right. That's right.
That's awesome.
See, and I don't like the mullet run.
Okay.
Because I'm out there doing charters in a 24-foot Carolina skiff. What are most of the mullet guys running?
24-foot Carolina skiffs.
So I am constantly being not harassed by FWC. I won't say that. I love our FWC officer.
Oh, no. Wait a minute.
They come in halfway.
Don't even get me started on FWC.
They turn in.
He said officers. He didn't say commissioners.
Yeah, right. That's true. Because FWC is like the FBI and the DOJ.
Right.
The head of them are corrupt and
absolutely
horrible, and you got a bunch of hardworking people trying to keep their nose down.
But I get way much more attention on my charters because of the boat that I run.
I can see that. I can see that. The nice part about that boat that you run, though, if you got six people and you still don't know there's anybody on the boat,
right?
You got to yell it for each other. Where'd you go? I'm down in the basement. Okay. Let's see. RJ, have you ever gone out to experience the mullet run, seen the tens of thousands of fish go through?
I have. I know about. I have cousins that were that live up in the Tampa Bay area. And many years ago, they taught me two interesting things to do with mullet. One was mullet herding.
And mullet herding?
Mullet herding. And they would take a boat, and they would change the trim on the outboard motor so it made lots and lots of bubbles and foam, right? And
yeah, tilted way up.
And,
yep.
And then they'd run around, and they'd keep making the circle smaller and smaller until you had hundreds of mullet, you know,
sure,
trapped in by the bubble thing.
You can learn a lot from dolphins.
Yeah, yeah. And the other one was mullet skeet. And since this happened when I was in my teens, the
statute of
limitations
is
run. Yeah. But
you're talking to an attorney. Statute of limitations on this is out. I don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, so anymore. I can tell you this story. We went out and played mullet skeet. And that was, we went out in canoes, right? And my cousin hands me a single shot 410. I said, what's this for? He said, mullet skeet. And I had no idea what he was talking about. And a mullet jumps, and he swings, and took a shot at it with the 410. Well, the rest of the evening was trying to shoot mullet as they came out of the water.
That's awesome. Yeah, I can honestly say I'm not unfamiliar with that.
With mullet skeet, yeah.
Yeah, mullet skeet.
It definitely increases your reflexibility, right?
Again, yeah. Only in Florida do you have to run your mullet through a magnet to get the shot out.
Yeah, I kind of get that.
So, boys and girls, if you've heard this story, don't try this at home.
Yeah,
it's, or out on the water, because FWC.
Any place
really,
where it's legal to duck hunt, you can actually shoot mullet.
Really?
Oh no, that's perfectly legal. It's not illegal to do mullet skeet. It is illegal not to collect them.
Ah.
If you shoot them and you let them lay in the water, that's illegal. But if you're shooting them, taking them home to fillet them or whatever, that's 100% legal. And it has to be in an area where you are allowed to hunt and shoot a shotgun or whatever it is. But
shotgun only.
Yeah, it's shotgun only or bow and arrow. But as far as I know, there's no laws against that.
So wait a minute. We've made this a legal sport?
I don't think it's illegal in any way, shape, or form. But
do you need a hunting license or a fishing license?
A fishing license. But you cannot shoot the mullet and let them go to the bottom and die. That is illegal. That is wasting. There's a
wanton waste.
Yeah, wanton waste. There's actually a legal term for that. It's like if you do a bow and arrow hunt for mullet and you just kill them and you don't do anything with them, that's illegal. You have to use them for bait. You have to use them for food. Something has to be done with an animal if you're going to do that. Any creature that falls under unrestricted species has that protection by the state where you cannot just waste them, kill them at no reason.
That's just silly. I can shoot mullet with a shotgun, but I can't take an 80 wide international pen and go fishing for hogs.
I'm not sure that's true or not. Is it?
Well, that sounds like an interesting sport in itself.
I was going to say, why couldn't you take a rod and reel out for hogs?
I don't know. I'll have to ask.
I mean, I don't know any laws against that. I mean,
I always thought
probably the laws of physics are against that.
I always thought it'd be fun.
Yeah, I mean, I just want to see you sitting on a grease skid holding on to the rod and reel while the hog takes off. Now, that would be a South Florida sleigh ride.
Tell me that wouldn't be an adventure.
Yeah, that would be it.
Well, okay. Say, we got off topic, didn't we?
There's a topic. Now you tell me.
I stand corrected.
It's been 2 years. You never told me there was a topic.
Our producer hasn't been paying attention. Yeah.
Apparently not.
Speaking of boutiques, yes.
Nice segue.
Now, here is the question before the court. Do I have to take that off my shirts now? We have, you know, this ain't no boutique, Fish and Frank's, this is, you know, and it's become a real thing. I mean, it's this ain't, Fish and Frank's, this ain't no boutique. Now, when you come in the store now, especially next week, I should have the floors done. And you're going to have to let me know, can I still have that on my shirt?
Why not? It's a fishing shop. They all tell lies anyway.
Yeah, because Robert and I were working on the boutique. Yesterday, Terry and I went down and we bought, you know, shirt racks and hat racks and shoe racks and all this kind of stuff. And I think I need to put a sign up, though. Caution, entering boutique. I mean, I think that's...
Please wipe your bare feet off here.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Please remove fish slime before entering boutique area.
Take off Pine Island Nikes now.
Yes. It's kind of a... Robert describes the store right now as a giant Easter egg hunt. Customers come in, they go, where'd it go? Where is this? We're like,
customers.
I don't really know, but if you tell me what it kind of looks like, I might be able to get the right area. But
customers?
It's an Easter egg hunt.
I'm only there once a week. It's different every time I walk in. Where's this at? I don't know. Your guess is as good as mine at this point.
Kind of walk around and look.
Come on, we'll both go look for it.
What'd you think of the store?
I had the Disneyland metaphor for it. It was like going to Disneyland. If you're a fisherman and you've been to Disneyland, you'll know what I'm talking about. It's stuff to look at. There's stuff everywhere. And you haven't even begun to stock the place.
It's going to be, I hope to have it all stocked by Thanksgiving. Right. But right now we're probably about 40% of what we're going to have.
Yeah, all we've done is take the 10 pounds of crap in the 5-pound bag and spread it out into a 10-pound bag.
Yeah.
There's still another 10 pounds of crap coming.
Right, right.
So it's literally very, very different. If it's clean, it smells right, it's, you know, completely different than what we were doing before. Speaking of Sheephead, I was thinking about Sheephead.
Speaking in your own mind?
Well, I was having a conversation. It was going on perfectly
me
fine.
Me, myself, and I.
Yeah. The inner voice.
That's not what they said. Okay. Sheephead have been moving in. And I
not
think
into the harbor.
Up to around Placida we've had a little bit.
Right.
It's not quite cool enough for them to really bunch up the spawn, but I think that 10-degree drop in temperature that we had in the water was just, some places it was 8 degrees, some places it was 10 or 12, but we had a good drop in temperature, and I think a lot of them going, hey, where's the girls? You know, let's go. You know, they think they've all started running in. And it makes sense because they're mostly smaller ones, like teenager size, you know. And they're always going to be the first ones to run and gun for that.
Sure.
Well, maybe not now. I don't know if kids actually go out and do things anymore. But let's say if you were my age and a teenager, we would have run out there to go find out what's going on. So, Robert, Sheephead. Get me out of this.
They're starting to move in around Placida.
I'm digging a hole here, buddy. Start talking. I got to get out of this. I got a shovel, not a ladder, and I need some help.
That's the bad thing about the voices in his head. Sometimes he listens to them.
Yeah.
Yes. Now, at Placida, they're starting to have some sheep's head show up along the old railroad trestle and off the pier there. And then hearing a couple minor reports of some of them out there on the Trembly Reef and the Novak Reef. So it's time to get prepared for them, but it's definitely not full-blown time to start really fishing for them hardcore. You know, a lot of people, this first cold front comes through, and they automatically think that the crappie and the sheep's head are going to go nuts, and really they don't. You know, it's the air temperature got cold, but the water temperature didn't get cold enough. It takes a while for some of this stuff to happen.
Well, but you'll get that cooler, but it didn't get cold or cool enough.
But you'll have that first little group of fish that'll get excited a little bit and come in, but they tend to fizzle out really quickly.
Kind of describes teenagers.
It kind of describes some of the older people, too.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, they really get, I get real excited and fizzle out real quick, too. Yeah, okay, I get it. Okay.
You know, and the other thing is, you know, it's, you know, people are asking for fiddler crabs right now, and one thing that people don't realize about fiddler crabs are one of the primary food sources of sheep's head. But Florida has built on, polluted, or basically taken way more than they can ever use and has wrecked the population of fiddler crabs. So they're imported in from Georgia, Carolinas, and Alabama, where they still have
the
fairly
Panhandle,
decent...
Jacksonville, places up there where they still have some.
Some.
But the problem is they're wild caught, so they're getting harder and harder to find, and the price is doubled and quadrupled.
Well, not only that, but unlike some of your seasonal fish that move into an area like king mackerel, they're in the panhandle right now working their way this way. So there's less in the panhandle, more in the middle of the state, and by the end of the season there will be more in the Keys and less in the middle of the state. Sheep's head, on the other hand, inundate the entire state at the same time. They're all over, from the Keys all the way up to the panhandle. Well, if you're catching these crabs up in the panhandle and along the border, it's more economical and much more profitable for them to only deliver to those shops closest to them, and we get the scraps because we're farther away. So it's hard for us to get those crabs in addition to weather.
We're in the same problem with shrimp right now. With shrimp, because our store's busy. We got quite a few people coming in every day looking for bait and all that, but so many of the stores in some of these areas that had red tide and where it was a real problem, they weren't ordering any bait. So the trucks won't run for one store. They need 6, 8, 10 stores to make it worthwhile running the trucks. They got to send a boat out. They got the crews on the boat to pay. They got the guy in the truck to pay. There's all this stuff. And they got to make some money out of this. And because we're busier, we're having a harder time getting bait because of some of the stores that are slower. But now, I have called around a lot. We're trying to load up on fiddler crabs. I've got a lot of calls out. Hopefully somebody calls me back. I think voicemail means,
I hope so. Yeah. I'll never forget the one year we had a standing order when they actually show up, May.
Yeah. So, one thing to watch out right now for boys and girls is the Econuts are on parade. Oh, my God. The green shirts are just going crazy. I mean, I haven't seen a more organized group of lunatics since the 1930s brown shirts. These green shirts, all of a sudden it's on TV now. Global warming is making more and stronger hurricanes, and, you know, we're going to be the death of us. They were saying that back when Charlie and all that hit, and we had 10 years where there was no hurricanes. At least they could come up with a new line or two, you know? Me, I'm a big fan of global warming. I have Canadian friends, and without global warming, there'd be 2 miles of ice on Canada, glaciers. You know, I'm sorry, global warming's been going on for 10,000 years. That's what ended the ice age. Yeah, will it get to be a problem if it keeps going? Probably, but give me a break and say something new. Everything about this right now is because they just had one of the strongest hurricanes of the year hit in the Philippines over there. And God bless those poor people. I mean, that was a Cat 5 going across tiny little islands. And then we just had the one hit in the Panhandle, and that's gut-wrenching. For those of us who lived through Charlie, when we were in Charlotte Harbor, parts of Punta Gorda and parts of Port Charlotte, with Charlie was weird, though, because if you were, like, say, north of Harbor Drive, you had very little damage. If you were north of Midway, you really didn't. It was like a bad thunderstorm. But if you were right there by the river, you got demolished, you know. And, you know, the store was gone, the house is gone, everything's gone. One thing, advice, if you're listening to us and you're up in the panhandle looking for a little diversion, just keep in mind it's one foot in front of the other. Do a little bit of something, get that done, do a little bit of something else. Don't try all the big jobs at once. You'll burn yourself out. Took me, what, 3.5 years to get back in the house?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, little patience. I got a nice house now. The store's doing well. But in 2004, there was nothing there. We had to start all over again. So keep in mind, take a little bit of time. And keep in mind, these green shirt eco nuts, don't listen to them. Next year, there might not be any hurricanes. That's one thing that no one on this earth, there's probably one supreme being that knows whether there's going to be hurricanes or not, but it darn sure ain't the news media. I've just been hearing a lot of that lately about, you know, global warming and we're going to have all these hurricanes and everybody's going to die. I'm like, get over yourselves. It's like the way they talk about red tide. In the Gulf of Mexico, it's starting to get good. I mean, real good.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Big cobia. We've had cobia at the reef. We've had anywhere from 28-inch to 60-inch cobia in the harbor. And we're hearing the same stuff on the reefs. What's going on in the Gulf, Robert?
Near shore, you've got, you know, obviously here mixed reports of the sheep's head, but I haven't heard much of the snappers. Most of the snapper and grunts are out there in that 15 to 20 mile mark, but that's also where I'm hearing of the barracuda, the cobia, permit, Spanish mackerel, along with a lot of small first droves of juvenile or baby kingfish. You know, they're starting to show up. All the king mackerel, there's little guys mixed in with those Spanish out there. The big ones are still probably a couple weeks away, but it's definitely time
to
get ready.
At least one cold front away.
Yeah, it depends. You know, yeah. I'm going to be optimistic and say at least a couple weeks away.
Well, it's 72 degrees in Pensacola right now. It's still like 76 in St. Pete.
Right.
So it's still a little warm for them to come, the bigger ones to come on down. We need one more cold front.
Yeah. Well, every year varies a little bit. It just, all I do is go by what I hear from off of Tampa to know how far away they are now. Because there's been a couple years where they've showed up here at 82 degrees.
That's true.
And now, so I gave up on that.
What's up with the squid wings? Everyone going offshore wants squid wings right now.
It's because we've built up such a healthy population of fishermen that wanted squid wings for so long, and then we went 6 months without them, and now we're able to get them again, and people realize how great they are. Plus this East Coast squid and this West Coast squid. Squid's a very, it's a worldwide creature,
right?
And a lot of them and a lot of different species of them. The problem is that they're kind of like the passenger pigeon. Everyone thinks that it's an infinite amount, you know, that they're never going to dwindle. And they're starting to overfish them. They've overfished some of these species and are having to switch to other species of squid to find. And some of these other species of squid are not as desirable as some of the others as far as bait goes. And with the squid wings, they literally fished them out of Mexico. The humble squid, yep, is almost pretty much extinct in Mexico. It took them almost a year to find a legal way to export them out of Peru now, because that's where the next population is that they're whacking and taking for commercial fishing purposes.
I'm going to say one of the big things for me, though, they're scary. Those Humboldt squid, that's, I got to tell you,
not something you want to tangle.
If they
with.
Were in the Gulf of Mexico, I would not go in the water.
Right.
I ain't afraid of much. I can go down with sharks. I mean, I want to get out of the water when I'm in there with sharks. I'm not stupid, but the sharks don't scare me that much. But those Humboldt squid, they scared a bejeebus out of me. They talk to each other. They get in like a circle around you, and they all glow different colors, then they all attack at the same time.
Yeah.
So even if you're bigger than them, they just get in big numbers, and they attack in a pack. They're scary.
And they're finding out that a lot of these scars on some of these big whales on their faces are from Humboldt squid.
Really?
If you're tangling with a whale and winning.
Yeah, I guess. You know, so I don't know. You know, I don't want to see anything dwindle in numbers, but they scared a bejeebus out of me. That's scary critter.
Yeah. Well, and the average person, you know, average squid wing that comes in comes from about a 6 foot to 7 foot long animal.
Right.
You get some of those larger squid wings, and that's coming from about an 8 foot animal. You know, people don't realize how big, you know, 8 foot's a giant squid. I mean, that's a really large animal.
Six foot bigger than me.
Yeah, you know, I mean, all you do is simply look at a little box of squid and look at those squid in there that are 8-10 inches long, and then multiply that and imagine that. You know, it's pretty scary.
Pretty scary critter. Kale, you were in California. Did you ever run across those while you're out there?
Rarely. Every once in a while, when we were fishing deep for rock cod or ling cod, you'd have something that you just could not stop, and it was usually a Humboldt squid.
Now,
you'd never have any proof of it, but it was one of the few things that were down there that deep that could actually just tear you up like that.
Tackle wrecker.
Yeah.
Gotcha. How about you, RJ? I don't know. Have you been out where the Humboldt squids are? Have you interacted with them at all?
Many years ago, worked on a project with the Navy on side-scan sonar, and we used to see big animals, and the engineers that were on the project, oh, that's a Humboldt squid, you don't want to bother with him. And then there were times they would lose the towfish. You know, you're pulling something behind you, it looks like a small torpedo,
right,
with the side-scan sonar gels on the side of it, and all of a sudden something would grab it, and you know, we're talking 500-pound test metal braided line going down to the towfish, and what happened? You'd come back with the line, and the bracket would be broken off.
Really?
So yeah, and you would see it coming. I mean, you're watching the side scan live, and you would see something coming at the side scan, and you can't see the shape of it; you just see the shadow coming at it, and then all of a sudden you're offline. And whatever it was, it grabbed the towfish and took off with it. So,
yeah, it sounds like a squid. Crazy, intelligent. A lot of the sci-fi people and scientists, they got together and they said, if something happens to humans, the most likely suspect for the next dominant creature on the planet would either be squid or octopus.
Yeah.
If octopus lived, like, say, five times longer than they do, they would literally compete with us for territory.
Well, they're amazing creatures. That whole group of, what are they called, cephalopods?
Cephalopods.
Yeah.
Okay. Back into the fishing a little bit here, guys. Talked about sheephead. Right now, I think you can try for them with shrimp. Frozen sand fleas are okay. Has anybody heard, is there any sand fleas on the beach right now?
No, not hardly at all. You know, the sand fleas, I mean, unfortunately, because of beach renourishment, it just hasn't been doing anything. And because we keep taking all these dead fish off, we're not naturally fertilizing the beaches to replenish those sand fleas and those coquina shells. So, you know, it's going to take a long time if you go to one of the uninhabited kind of islands like Cayo Costa or someplace like that where they don't do beach renourishment. You'll find sand fleas there in better numbers, but you're going to work really hard to find any fishable numbers of sand fleas anywhere.
All right. So if you're going to go out for snook right now, what's the number one bet for catching snook at this point?
Pinfish.
All right.
I'm going to use pinfish anywhere on the east side, west side. If I'm fishing in the canals, I'm throwing artificials.
What are you throwing for artificial?
A Rapala 10 X-Rap in either the OG or the Blackback with Silver Side.
The S. You got the OG and the S. That's what they are.
Yeah, okay.
Yep. Redfish. Kale, what's the best redfish bait right now?
I'm going to go with pinfish, crabs, and shrimp. And don't be afraid to cut those pinfish up. Sometimes that cut the head to tail off that pinfish and throw that chunk out there can be even more productive than a live pinfish for them.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. There's been guys doing pretty well on some of the cut bait, especially the cut pinfish. And that seemed to be a consistent theme the last couple of weeks with those redfish out there of all sizes.
All right. RJ, if I get the floor done, next week you and I are going fishing. We're going to take the boat out.
Sounds like a deal.
Yeah, we're going to do that. I got to get the floors done in that new store and the old store this week. And but next week, we got to get out in the boat. This is I'm going crazy. I got this lift and all that. At SOS, I got a electric winch, a 12-volt winch. I got two of them. Jerry sold me one. He gave me another one as a backup, so I'll be able to get my boat on and off a little easier. But we got to get out, get the boat running. I got to run it anyway, so let's mean you get out there. Let's see. Out of the notes that I have, snapper fishing, grunts, dinner fish. I'm hearing not only is the fishing really good for them out like 10, 15 miles, but a ton of short grouper out there right now.
Yeah, there have been a lot of little gag grouper and some little red grouper with the occasional legal group red grouper, but very few. Most of those guys are getting those out 35 to 45 miles. And there's been only a handful of guys going out and targeting those.
But, I mean, the amount of 17, 18, 19-inch red and gag grouper in close right now is staggering.
Yeah, yeah.
I know of two people I talked to, they each caught well over 30 of them out there in like 4 hours. They were just loading up these little, they've got to let them go, but, you know, tons of them there. Triple tail is one thing that nobody's talking about, but they're whispering about it.
You know why?
Why?
Because there's no stone crab pots out there until you get out about 8 to 12 miles.
Yeah.
Everyone ran their strings at 1 to 5 miles and got zero. One guy out of 400 traps got seven stone crabs.
Ouch.
That's it. So a lot of them are having to reset their entire strings and go out deeper. And I don't know if it's from that black tide hypoxia thing or something. But the crabbers are running their pots out a lot deeper now.
It's got to be something because the crabbers prefer that murky water. If the water's too clear, those stone crabs will stay buried in the sand.
Well, and there's been plenty of food for them too. But I was talking to the shrimper yesterday, and she was telling me that two of her stone crabbers, the one in particular, had seven crabs out of 400 string.
I've seen some near shore video, underwater video, and there were lots and lots of dead crabs and mantis shrimp in those videos.
Well, that was that black tide that went through.
Yeah, yeah. And I was off of Boca Grande, a couple of those clips I saw. So
yeah, that was...
I'm not surprised that there aren't, because crabs don't move that far that fast. I mean, they'll come back in again.
Well, and those are crawling crabs, so they're a little different. They're not like the swimming crab, like the pass crab or the blue crabs that can get up high in the water column and boogie. Your harlequin crabs or shameface crabs and your stone crabs have to crawl along the bottom and rely on strictly just that kind of mobility, so they can't move fast enough to get out of their own way most of the time. So that's part of the issue, and I think that's why a lot of the stone crabbers have realized that, we need to reset out much deeper and see what's going on.
Because it's going to take a while for them to repopulate those areas, because like you say, they move so slow, and they really don't move that far at any time. So.
Yeah. Exactly.
So it's going to be egg drift and things like that that's going to bring them back.
And
to
also,
the area.
We had the hurricane go through, and it did change the bottom out there. So some of these stone crabbers set up on their old line spots, and then didn't realize that their little bit of structure or shell bottom had been covered until they go to pull them, because they're allowed to they're allowed to legally soak them for the first 10 days, from October 5th till the 15th, and then on the 15th it opens. So that's when they go out and check all their pots, and they didn't realize, I think some of them just flat out forgot that the topography of the bottom out there changed enough to maybe screw them up too.
So a little
bit of
both.
I think they got a few good and bad things going on there, but it's
hopefully they find some, because I could do with a stone crab meal. And the one thing, even if you're an eco nut green shirt and you know you're worried about the environment, with stone crabs, they have to leave a claw on them. They can only take one of the two claws. The other one has to stay with the crab so that they can eat and regenerate and populate. But they only take one claw off, and it doesn't hurt the crab when they do it. They literally just drop it, let it go. And so it's a very, what do they call it, being green nowadays? It's a reusable, recyclable.
Sustainable resource, yeah.
Sustainable resource. So, you know, eating stone crab claws, when you're doing the stone crab swims away fine. And he's still got one of his claws. They don't take both. They only take one. And so it's actually
And it grows
cool.
back.
And it grows back. So they get to harvest them year after year after year. So that's one thing. If you want to eat seafood from a renewable resource, stone crab. Let's see. Pompano. Yeah, pompano. There's five of them. Right?
Amazing pompano year. Amazing.
Okay.
Elaborate.
Stretch it out. We still got 5 minutes here, buddy. We got to keep it going.
They've been running the east wall in good numbers. I think just about everybody that came in the shop this morning to get shrimp was headed to Boquilla to fish for pompano. We got guys on from the Pompano Fishing Pier limiting out.
From the Boquilla
from
Fishing Pier.
From Boquilla Fishing Pier, sorry. Yeah. Limiting out. I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah, we've been hearing about it. Now, one of the things that when Robert and I are resetting the store, trying to recreate this giant Easter egg hunt we got going on, we decided to put the pompano jigs and all that blending around, because we carry a few different types, over into the crappie jigs, because crappie jigs tend to make good pompano jigs.
Absolutely.
And pompano jigs can actually be used on a lot of the crappie. I mean, you can blend those back and forth, fresh salt or salt water, for sure. Spadefish, pompano, a lot of these species like that. Those are all very, very similar.
Did the silly jig start out as?
Walleye jig.
A walleye lure.
Yeah.
So, banana jig.
That was one of the things Robert and I decided to do. Where we had all the pompano stuff, we're going to concentrate all that in one area and then blend it right over to the crappie stuff, because they just kind of go together.
Sure.
I've used crappie jigs, especially the marabou hair. I tip them with a little tiny piece of shrimp, and I mean, I whack pompano, spadefish, permit, little snappers, all that kind of stuff, sand brim. They all love a crappie jig tipped with a little piece of shrimp, especially the marabou ones. And
they're even fun for trout fishing as it cools off and you get on those open flats. You don't have to fight them with a strong drag where you break out your ultralights. Those crappie jigs are phenomenal for that.
Yeah, we just ordered a bunch of crappie rods today.
Good multitasking, fun stuff. That's always great when you can have tackle, lures, all that good stuff that you can target multiple species with rather than just one.
Yeah, and if you've moved down from up north and you're looking in your stuff and you see your crappie rods, this is the time to take the crappie rods out. And that 5.5 foot ultralight, leave the 2 pound test monofilament on it or the 4 pound test monofilament, put about 15 pound test leader and a little crappie jig on it, same as you would if you were fishing for crappie up north, a sockalo or crappie or whatever you want to call them. And take them out and go after some pompano, permit, spadefish. I mean, it's a lot of fun on those little tiny rods.
No, absolutely.
Especially the spadefish.
And you're fishing open water for the most part, so you don't have to fight them with a strong drag, or you're fishing out on the beach for them where it's just open water. You only have to fight the little bit of riptide and some of the waves sometimes, but still open water.
Okay. Well, anyway, remember, head down to SOS Marine in Harbor Heights. They're having a big yard sale. Jerry's retiring, so they're closing down SOS Marine. Like I say that with a tear in my eye, I mean, it literally chokes me up. I mean, Jerry is one of the most amazing people I've ever met. That's, if I had my glass, I'm going to tell you, 2451 Sulstone Drive in Harbor Heights. They got a big yard sale going on, all kinds of old boat stuff being sold, some new boat stuff. I bought a big box of stuff there this morning. We've got redfish all over the harbor, snook all over the harbor. We got a bit of tarpon left, still targetable out there. Spanish mackerel moving in about 1 to 5 miles out. Snapper fishing, cobia are moving in, lots of cobia. Fishing Frank here in the chair, the blind tarpon across from me, Captain Kale, and RJ in the control center. Thanks for listening, guys.
I said fish, fish. Fish, 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 fishing. Boy, I'm going fishing. A
just to ease my mind.